It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Coming up on episode number 94 of Sports Day Plus. At 6:45, where are we at in society? Would your kid like a side of chemicals with that Lunchable? According to a new consumer report, they may not have a choice. At 6:15, it is the first of my weekly two-segment chat with Justin Wells of Inside Texas, talking Longhorn recruiting, transfer portal, and yes, spring football. And in mere seconds, it's a tale of two coaching philosophies starring Dan Hurley and Jim Harbaugh. Plus, where did some Longhorns end up in ESPN's latest two-round mock NFL draft? I am your host, Trey Elling. You can give me a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave, and do the same for ESPN Austin at 1027 ESPN. Well, as I just mentioned, ESPN does have a new two-round mock NFL draft. The draft happening in just a couple weeks now. Actually, 2 weeks from tomorrow is when the draft commences. And with just 2 weeks ago, the expectation is that the Longhorns will have at least one, if not several, guys drafted in the first round. And what happens after that is anybody's guess, although I do feel like we've seen some stock drop rather than rise in terms of those possible second or third rounders over the last few weeks, really going back to the NFL scouting combine. Jatavion Sanders not doing himself any favors. Devondre Sweat, unfortunately, probably in that category too, as we talked about yesterday. Him getting that DWI over the weekend is unfortunately a mark on how teams look at him as a prospect at the next level. But there are guys who have not hurt their cause necessarily, starting with Byron Murphy, who is the first Longhorn off the board in this two-round mock draft, according to Mel Kiper Jr. First of all, let's take a look at where quarterbacks end up. By the way, there are trades in this draft, so just keep that in mind. No surprise, Caleb Williams going one to the Bears. Commanders take Jaden Daniels, two. Patriots take Drake May, three. Cardinals, Stan Pat, take Marvin Harrison Jr., fourth. And this mock does have the Vikings moving into the top five, trading with the Chargers to snag Michigan's J.J. McCarthy. So where do Longhorns end up? As I mentioned, Byron Murphy, first Longhorn off the board, according to Mel Kiper. I am a little bit surprised not to see Byron Murphy trending more towards a top 10 pick, rather down into the second half of the first round. And that's where Mel Kiper has him, going 18 to the Cincinnati Bengals. Kiper says, as of now, he's assuming the Bengals are keeping T. Higgins, who was franchise tagged but did request a trade. If they plan to give Higgins an extension, they could look toward a defense that ranked last in the league in both yards per play allowed and yards per pass attempt allowed last season. Murphy led the Big 12 with 33 QB pressures, which is even more impressive when you consider that he played nearly all of his snaps from the interior. He has a lightning quick get off at the snap. He's the best three technique tackle in this class. Next Longhorn to go, it's going to be a wide receiver. Which wide receiver? Well, according to Mel Kiper, it's Xavier Worthy going 23 to the Chargers, which would be a pick that they acquired from Minnesota to allow the Vikings to move into the top five to take a QB. What Kiper has to say about Xavier Worthy? That's pretty obvious, right? Although I would be shocked if Jim Harbaugh goes receiver with this first-round pick. The Chargers have given up all of their best receiving threats from last year. Keenan Allen, now a Bear. Mike Williams, now with the Jets. Austin Eckler, no longer on the team. Gerald Everett, no longer on the team now. And so it makes a whole lot of sense for them to focus on wide receiver and what is looked at as a strong wide receiver draft class. Kiper says you may know Worthy for his speed, set the combine record for the fastest 40-yard dash, but he has a well-rounded game, including 26 touchdown catches for the Longhorns, who used him on vertical routes, screens, and crossers. He's tough to tackle once he gets a full head of steam. Also has a ton of value in the return game as well. The pick after 23 is the Dallas Cowboys, who Kiper has them taking Tyler Guyton, the tackle, out of Oklahoma. They do need to focus on both lines of scrimmage, so that is no surprise there. Next Longhorn off the board A.D. Mitchell? No, not going to the Buffalo Bills. Kuiper has them taking Brian Thomas out of LSU, another wide receiver, of course. How about the Detroit Lions? A.D. Mitchell to the Detroit Lions. Boy, I would like that a lot with what Detroit has been able to do offensively over these last few years. I believe they did lose Josh Reynolds off of last year's roster. And Kuiper says Mitchell could be a fit. At 6'2", he ran a 4.34, 40 at the combine, showing off impressive physical tools, 11 touchdowns last season. You might consider this a luxury pick, but this roster is so talented that the Lions can afford to take Mitchell. Next Longhorn selected, according to Mel Kuiper Jr., well, that would be in the second round, just one second rounder for the Longhorns, according to Mel Kuiper. Jonathan Brooks to the Dallas Cowboys at 56. So take that for what you will. A lot of people jumping on the Jonathan Brooks being the most physically talented running back in this class. A possible first rounder, if not for that knee injury. Even still, a pretty surefire day two pick as it stands right now, according to the experts. All right, real quick, I wanted to shift into a coaching philosophy conversation because there are a couple of guys who have done some interesting things, recently said some interesting things. We're going to start with Dan Hurley, the head coach for the back-to-back national champ UConn Husky men's basketball teams, and he was asked about the types of players that he looks to recruit, and I just love this answer and wanted to share that with you right now.
There's measurable talents you have to have, right? The height, the speed, the skill set. But we spent a lot of time really focusing on the parents.
The parents?
Yeah, on the parents. Are they going to be fans while they're on campus of their son, or are they going to be parents? Are they going to, hold them accountable, have an expectation that when something goes wrong, that it's not the coach's fault, that it's their son's got to work harder, he's got to do more, he's got to earn his role. We've got a real old school culture here of accountability. I'm an old school coach in terms of the tone I take with my players in practice, the expectations with effort, the focus on winning and we over me.
Like, what does that mean?
Have they played on 7 different travel teams? Have they transferred to 4 or 5 different high schools? When you talk to the parents in the recruiting process, are they constantly complaining about the coaches after a bad game, or are they, sending you a text or you having a conversation, where their son has got to do more, he's got to play harder, he's got to work on his skills. They tell on themselves, they drop hints, and you've got the wrong type of kind of, people in that inner circle around your players, they'll sink your program.
So that is Dan Hurley, head coach for the UConn men's basketball team, just went back-to-back, and it's a very healthy perspective, especially in this era of college sports, looking for guys who have a little bit of that dog mentality and who are mentored by those who teach them the value of persevering, not quitting something because you haven't received your comeuppance just yet or things haven't gone to plan, that there is a grinded out ideal that comes into play that helps to create champions over time. And Dan Hurley's teams are the epitome of that right now. The other idea that I wanted to share right now, the other coaching philosophy, is from Jim Harbaugh, who is guano crazy, if we're being completely honest about things, but he's also a really good coach. He just won a national championship with Michigan right now. Now he's going to try and replicate that success once again at the NFL level with the LA Chargers. And Harbaugh, in the psychological warfare that he may wage with his players, has decided to do this in the locker room. Not only are players' lockers now arranged numerically, which makes sense, I guess, each player nameplate now shows their recruiting level coming out of high school. They're a 5-star, they get the 5-star. If they're not rated, they get the NR next to their name. Talk about a great motivator for these guys to live up to that billing or to create more of that dog mentality for those who doubted them coming out of high school who have made it up to that point. All right, we are going to continue the football conversation on the other side with Justin Wells of Inside Texas and InsideTexas.com for our weekly 2-segment chat right here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
It is a Wednesday, which means it's time for my weekly chat with Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, the Inside Texas YouTube channel. Follow him on Twitter at JustinWells2424 and hear him on this show for a couple of segments, typically on Wednesdays. Justin, thank you as always for the time. How are you doing today?
Hey now, another day in paradise, my man. Just doing a little recruiting, a little team update. You know how we roll it Inside Texas. What about you guys?
Oh, things are good on this end. It was crummy weather yesterday, but the skies are bright today. And yeah, we all went through what was a pretty underwhelming solar eclipse here in the Austin area. I was actually down in Kerrville coming back from Big Bend, and it was completely cloudy there. And that was supposed to be one of the best spots in America to see the eclipse. But it's 2 days later, and none of us are worse for the wear, I guess.
Well, it was pretty cool here in Tyler. Yeah, it was overcast, but there was a time where, you know, it kind of cleared out and it was completely dark. And my son was thrilled. My dog was going crazy. And it was pretty cool. We had totality for about three and a half minutes. And my son loved it. And that's the most important thing.
So I was hanging out for a bachelor party in Big Bend all weekend. You've been all over this state, obviously. There's not a ton of high school sports happening in Big Bend, though. Have you ever spent any time out in Big Bend in West Texas?
I have not. I'm sure there's some recruits out there, maybe even a couple prospects, but until Texas decides that they're offerable, yeah, I have not made it out that way. But I know it is I've heard it is absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing, and I guarantee you this, if there is a recruit out there, they're probably going to be mean as a scorpion because every creature you encounter who lives in that part of the world has to be built a little bit tougher than the rest of us. So good luck in finding that kid if he or she exists. Now, let's go ahead and talk about recruiting. We do have spring ball to get to as well, of course, but it was a big recruiting weekend for the Longhorns this last weekend. Who all came into town, and was there any movement in terms of guys ending up ranking Texas a little bit higher on their list than they may have heading into the weekend visit?
Yeah, it was a star-studded event, man. There's probably 20, 25 kids, invite only, mostly 4 and 5 stars, priority targets. You know, on the offensive end, you brought in the number one receiver in the country, DeCorian Moore, LSU commit. Texas did a great job there. He'd been in Austin the weekend before for the Texas Relays. Texas just continues to chop away at that recruitment. That's one that, you know, even before this weekend, I thought that Texas was in a position to flip more. I feel even stronger about that after this weekend. A lot of family ties here, a lot of connections, proximity to his school, a lot of Duncanville guys here as well, Colin Simmons in his ear. And I think he just loves watching the practice and the scrimmage and watching those quarterbacks throw the ball, watching the receivers be productive. And when they have two guys drafted in the next first two rounds in 3 weeks, that's only going to help the Texas Longhorns' chances with more. Another 5-star, Khalik Lockett, wide receiver out of Sac. He was in town. I think that's going to be Texas versus the field. A&M's in the mix. He's going to go to LSU, but he'll be back in Austin for his official visit in June. I love where Texas stands with him right now. On the defensive side, you had guys like Zion Williams, one of the most important recruits in the entire cycle, 6'5", 320-pound defensive lineman out of Lufkin. Been kind of trending towards LSU a little bit because he's built such a good relationship with Bo Davis while he was in Austin. Now he's in Baton Rouge, and so that overlapped for Brian Kelly and those guys. But Texas pulled even. If there was one guy that I think he had a better impression and a better weekend, it was Zion Williams. Really connected with Kenny Baker. He's a relationship-centered kid. And so I think the fact that him and Coach Baker got to kind of spend a lot of one-on-one time was very valuable. Not to mention the menu of food he ate was unreal. I posted that at InsideTexas.com yesterday. You really got to check that out. I want to say it was probably between 7,000 and 8,000 calories in one meal. I was absolutely shocked at how much food this man devoured, but he had a great time. Jonah Williams, a 5-star safety / athlete / baseball player out of Galveston Ball. You know, Oklahoma's had, I think, a little bit of the edge in that recruitment for a while. I think Texas is making up ground there. Blake Gideon's doing a great job. He's a priority to these guys now. He understands that. Got to hang out with David Pierce and some of the baseball guys at the facility before their game with BYU. I think that was big as well because Jonah Williams is a bona fide baseball prospect. Top to bottom, man, it was a handful of guys. Jordan Davison, the running back out of Modern Day, he had a great time. I think Ohio State and Texas have a battle there. for his services. I'm probably missing a few guys, but the truth is there were so many guys. It was, you know, Texas did exactly what it needed to do. You can bring in recruits for tours of the facilities and the campus and meeting staffers and other players and coaches. But when you show them a live scrimmage, you show them what it's going to be about. And I don't know if there's a stronger selling point than having players watch these guys practice. One of the biggest takeaways was the fact that they hit each other, which is common in college. In high school, it's not. And so the fact that they can hit each other and try to kill each other and yet still be good friends once they walked off the field really resonated with these guys. And it kind of just emphasized more about how Sark's culture really has taken over this program.
Now, Texas also did add a commitment to the class of 2025, a running back. So considering that it's Deshard Choice, who is the running back's coach, you give him a lot of credit for whoever it is. But what can you tell us about Ricky Stewart, the running back recruit?
I can tell you that he is a bowling ball of knives. Like, he runs with a purpose. He is a hard-nosed kid. He barely says anything. He only talks when it's necessary. Very smart, very studious. This is a guy that I think fits at Texas perfectly. And this was his dream offer. As we had reported many times, once Deshard Choice came through Tyler and offered him and brought him on campus, that to me was kind of the end of it. He had always wanted that dream offer turned into the dream commitment. It was one of those things. We actually had tipped off on Saturday morning that something could happen. So Joe Cook and I had put some stuff together. The news came out, you know, about lunchtime, 1 o'clock on Saturday. Ricky wasn't going to mess around. Some recruits like to take a lot of visits, and they like to stack offers, and they like the attention and the gear and everything that comes with it. Ricky's just looking for a place to go to college. He's just looking for a place to become a better man and play football. And he found that in Texas. And so that recruitment has been shut down now. And adding Ricky's big. They'll add one more running back likely in this cycle. They really like Davison. And then they'll shift to 2026 when there are three or four really good running backs in state within about 2 or 3 hours of each other in the Dallas-Fort Worth, East Texas area. And so Deshard Choice just keeps doing what he does, getting exactly who he wants.
I feel like personally it means a little bit more for you with these East Texas kids, Justin, because you have more of an opportunity to establish a connection with these guys and their family and friends, and that relationship is really there, and that's obviously very important for what you do. Does it mean a little bit more for you with Ricky Stewart, considering that you are both residents of Tyler, Texas? My birthplace, by the way.
Yeah, it means a little bit because I just, you know, I'm from this region, and I just absolutely love seeing these kids do well. And that doesn't necessarily mean going to Texas. You know, I like seeing them get a scholarship offer and getting out of East Texas and having an opportunity to grow as a person and to be cultured and to see new things and experience new stuff. And so I get excited when any of these kids commit to a college. I had told sources within the program a number of times, this was a kid at some point they're going to have to get on. And I guess after 64 touchdowns and 2.5, 3 seasons, he still has a senior year to play. He finally got people's attention. And, you know, Ricky, again, he's not just a great football player. He's a really good kid. He does not care about the attention. He does not care about the likes and engagement and TikTok videos. He cares about being a better running back. He cares about getting Chapel Hill back to the state championship after last year. Ricky is very focused, very driven. And I think there's a type of guy that Sark and Choice want. And Ricky Stewart checks every one of those boxes.
You know, I was listening to Dan Hurley talk about the type of kids that they're looking for at UConn, which is obviously a very successful program now, having won back-to-back championships. And he talks about some of the measurables, but he also talks about where a kid comes from and the sorts of influences that they have in terms of understanding the value of grinding it out, not necessarily quitting an opportunity because things aren't going exactly what you're looking for. It does seem like Steve Sarkisian and his staff are doing a great job of identifying those types of guys too.
No, it is. And in this day and age of college athletics, I think it's harder now than it's ever been.
Yeah.
Because the NIL money makes it above the table, and now you have bids. You've got bidding wars for some of these kids. And so it's easy for a kid to get wrapped up in himself and not forget this is still a team sport. This is still a team atmosphere, and the best teams are the ones that bring home hardware, not the best players. And, you know, you got to tip your cap to Dan Hurley because he does it the exact way you should. He's concise. He's maniacal. He coaches those kids hard. One of the UConn kids had mentioned before that national title game that he said this year he coached us a lot harder than last year coming off a national title. And he said, but we needed that because we were a different team with a different identity. That's just a really good coach having a pulse on his program.
Yeah.
Steve Sarkisian has that. I mean, he has that nailed down. He knows the pulse of this place. He understands the guys that are putting in the extra work, that want to get better, that are enrolling early, trying to get on the field as much as possible. He's built up competition at every single position. And I think ultimately he's still recruiting those team-first-oriented kids. You've got to get talent. That's the only way you're going to win in this sport. But you've also got to get guys that buy into each other. And I think Sark, in his fourth year, he's really done that, especially in the recruiting department. And also with his portal take. You know, a lot of teams, when they've got holes, they just go to the portal to fill them. Well, Sark is more judicious in that manner. He wants to make sure you're not only a physical fit, but you're a mental fit, that you're an emotional fit. And in this day and age, with the transfer portal, with NIL, it's only a few select coaches, I feel like, that can really navigate it to the max, you know, to maximize their guys. Dan Hurley obviously has that thing nailed down at UConn. Don't be shocked if he's winning two or three more national titles in the next 5 or 10 years. And with the way Sark is building in Austin, I can see that trend hitting there as well.
Very well said. Speaking of the transfer portal, that's where we're going to start on the other side of this commercial break, because guess what? The transfer portal opens on Monday. What does that mean for the Longhorns in terms of taking and perhaps even giving as well? Justin Wells will tell us here on the other side, right here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back for one more segment with Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, the Inside Texas YouTube channel. You can find him on social media, on Twitter specifically, a.k.a. X. For those of you who are big Lady Bird Lake fans, at JustinWells2424. And you hear him on this program for a couple of segments, typically on Wednesdays. Justin, you just briefly mentioned the transfer portal. It does open back up on April 15th, which is a Monday. Perhaps the biggest name who has announced that he is entering the transfer portal right now is a guy that I think is always at a position of need for just about anybody, much less a guy who is productive like this at the Power 5 level. USC defensive tackle Bear Alexander. Just how in is Steve Sarkisian and his staff going to be on Bear Alexander coming from USC?
Tackle is going to be the spot that they try to add a guy to. We know that. Maybe two, if possible, because that's the one position Texas wants to have a little bit more depth before they jump into the arena of the SEC. Now, that being said, Bear Alexander, like you said, played pretty well for USC last year despite playing on a bad defense. Bear is a guy that he's just ready to come home. I think he wants his family to be able to watch him play in his last year or two in college before he attempts to go to the NFL. And, you know, for Bear Alexander, this will be his seventh school in 7 years. One, that might be a record. But two, people tend to, you know, make a quick judgment on the personality of a kid when they move a lot. They think negatively. And they really shouldn't do that with this kid. Bear is a really good kid. I've known this guy since his freshman year at Terrell, Texas. And he's a good kid, and he really does buy into the locker room and help out. Sometimes people around him make decisions, and I think he gets caught up in it at times. But Bear's going to come home. It's going to be somewhere figuratively in the state of Texas. The Longhorns are probably going to be in the mix. I think there's a notion that Bear would prefer Texas and Texas would prefer Bear, but it's early. And so we have to kind of let this thing play out a little bit. Eric Nalin and I posted a note about noon yesterday about how we were hearing about Bear's going to probably hit the portal and kind of some of the stuff he was looking at. And then Hayes Fawcett broke it about 3 o'clock that he was going to hit the portal. And so this is one of those things where we've tried to tell fans all, you know, as much as we can, Texas wants another defensive lineman. Two, if they can possibly get to that point. Now there's still 4 or 5 players over the limit to get under that 85 scholarship mark. But Bear Alexander checks a lot of boxes. He does a lot of good things. He wants a fresh start, and if that means coming home and playing his last year or two before he gets ready for the NFL, that's what he'll do.
Assuming that he takes care of business like he should once he steps foot on campus here in Texas, this is a hypothetical now, of course. He has not committed anywhere just yet. Do you think that he is one of the likely defensive tackle starters at the start of the 2024 season?
Man, I can't tell you. He'll be in the running. I can tell you that much. But I feel like Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton have a pretty good grasp on their spot right now. But listen, if Sark has proven anything, you could be a transfer portal kid or you could be a early enrollee true freshman like Ryan Wingo. He's going to give you the opportunity. And if you're better than the guy that you're going against, you're going to play more. And so, I think it's easy to speculate he would easily be in the rotation. He would get his 25, 30 snaps a game, I would feel like. But we don't know for sure until we see the dynamic of what the defense becomes. We wouldn't know for sure until he comes in. I'll just say this. Sark would give him every opportunity to win that starting spot.
So if Texas is going to have to pare things down just a little bit to get down to that 85 scholarship number, and they may try and take a couple more guys in the portal, they are going to end up losing a couple of dudes in the process. Are you worried at all that Texas is going to lose somebody who is looked at as a significant contributor for the upcoming football season?
Absolutely not. Texas is going to lose a handful of guys. It's part of the process. It's part of the business now. It's the attrition that you're going to see every time these portal windows open and close. There's one position, you know, that Texas has a mass amount of talent and depth, and that's the offensive line. And some of these backups are good enough to start at other places. Kyle Flood has been tremendous in building up that offensive line room coming out of Alabama. He wanted the large human quotient, and he got it in spades. There's tons of those guys, and they're recruiting guys coming behind them to do the exact same thing. But at the end of the day, I believe there's 17, maybe 18 O-linemen on that roster, and that's a little too much. So I think you're going to see a couple of those O-linemen head off to other places, maybe for opportunities to play a little bit more. I could see Texas possibly losing a couple guys on defense, maybe at linebacker. It remains to be seen. You know, we've heard a few names, but we don't want to put anything out yet. It's not really fair to the kid or the program. But there's going to be a few guys. We've tried to tell people there's going to be a few guys at the end of the spring game that decide to go on to the proverbial greener pasture just for the opportunity to play a little bit more and succeed some more. But just to understand, at this stage, I don't see anybody of true importance really hitting the portal. I think it's going to be mainly guys in the backup area. Now, granted, some of these backups are good. Some of these backups could play in multiple places, and I think they may want that opportunity. But, you know, that's what the spring ball is for. Sark has given these guys a chance to earn that spot, to earn, reps in that rotation. And so we've still got a couple weeks to see how this thing will play out.
As far as spring football is concerned, we had a scrimmage on Saturday, well attended, as we talked about last segment. Ryan Wingo has been a standout all spring. That's great to hear that a true freshman is making the most of an opportunity like that. Who or what else stood out in Saturday's scrimmage, Justin?
Jaden Blue. If I heard his name once, I heard it 9 times. Jaden Blue was fantastic. And running a little bit of that 21 personnel with him and Baxter in the backfield at the same time sounds freaking fantastic. I mean, it's Jaden Blue is taking that next step. You know, he really flashed last year. We saw that. Baxter was the incumbent with Brooks, you know, at starting running back. And so, you know, you could make a case that Blue was the better running back the second half of the season last season for Texas. And he's continuing to pick up that pace and that momentum. And so Jaden Blue is a guy that I keep hearing about. Some of the old linemen from – I heard Cam Williams is starting to come around. Always good things about Banks and Majors and those guys. On the defensive side, Michael Taff and Derek Williams are making plays at safety. Leona LaFalle is making plays at linebacker, backing up guys like David Benda and Anthony Hill Jr. There's so much talent there. You know, Sark has to wake up every day thankful and grateful because this is a lot – different looking roster than it was 4 years ago. And the vibes and the culture in that locker room are just, they continue to be strong. This group really likes each other. And there's a lot of self-motivated guys. Listen, when you sign 23, 24 kids in a class 18 of them enroll early and are already going through spring ball and skipping their senior year of high school, you're recruiting a specific type of kid, a self-motivated, focus-driven type guy. You get enough of those guys in a locker room, and that's how you build a winning culture. And that's what Sark's doing, and I think that's what he's getting out of spring right now. The offense has kind of had the upper hand in most of them. The defense, they'll take their licks as well. I know Colin Simmons flashed, the freshman out of Duncanville. He had a couple sacks. It's a really good mixture of veterans and young guys. I think those are your best teams, is when you've got good leadership, good elder statesmen, but you also got those young, hungry guys. And that's this freshman and sophomore class in Austin right now is ridiculous. And so spring ball's been going well. The main thing to me is the lack of injuries. I mean, they've only had a few guys really dinged up. And if they can get through spring without a major injury, to me, that is the biggest win of all.
I'm knocking on wood as you say that, because you're right. That is a huge deal for sure. All right, last question now, Justin. I'm going to throw you a little bit of a curveball because you are a Cowboys fan, a self-loathing Cowboys fan at this point, perhaps. Actually, the person that you loathe is Jerry Jones. But rumors started to surface over the last couple of days that the Cowboys could end up selecting a quarterback before it's all said and done in the draft happening a little bit later this month. Would you be okay with that, considering that Dak Prescott is entering the final year of his deal, and who knows what's going to happen with Mike McCarthy after this year, too?
If you're asking me, do I think they should add a backup quarterback? Absolutely. They've got Trey Lance, the former number one pick from San Francisco. But if that means you got to go in there, if you find a quarterback you like in any draft, draft it. There's not a more important position in all of sports. If you can find a quarterback you really like and you get him in the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round, you do that. I mean, the San Francisco 49ers almost won a Super Bowl with the last pick in the draft of the seventh round. So if you can find a quarterback that you think can contribute that's not named Cooper Rush, man, you make the call. And I'm not sure if you don't want to do it too early, because I think this is a draft that's stocked with quarterbacks. And I think a lot of them are going to go off the board early. And this is not a team that's going to draft a quarterback early. They're going to go offensive line early. They're going to go defensive line. Probably another linebacker to replace Lander Van Der Esch. Probably another receiver to replace Michael Gallup. And hopefully a running back, since I don't know if they have one on the particular roster. I saw one mock draft a couple days ago where it had Jonathan Brooks going to the Cowboys in the second round. If you want to talk about positions that are much more of need, that's what we're talking about. But, again, if you can find a quarterback that you like, that you think can run your system in any round, at any draft, you take him. Because Dallas, the Dak Prescott era, I don't know how much longer Dak's going to be there. He's a top five quarterback in the NFL. He was one of the best in the league last year. I think he carries that over. But you always have to be prepared. You always have to have contingencies. So I would have no problem with him drafting a quarterback sometime in the second or third day, just not in the first round. That's ridiculous. Plus, if they could tank properly, and that's a big if they could tank properly, they could fit themselves up for Quinn Ewers next year, because he's likely going to go in the first 5 or 10 picks of the 2025 draft. I think that would have a better national story to it.
Guy who is always prepared is Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, the Inside Texas YouTube channel. Nice enough to join me on Wednesdays for a couple of segments to talk Longhorn sports and more. Justin, thank you as always for the time, my friend.
Nothing but love, bubba.
Coming up in Where Are We At in Society, would your kid like some chemicals with that Lunchable that you sent them to school with? Well, they may not have a choice.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Final segment of today's show means it's time for...
Where Are We At in Society today?
That's right. It is your regular look at stories that show we as a people are headed in the wrong direction. Very occasionally, I will bring you a story that provides a sense of optimism that has us all saying to ourselves, hey, maybe we as a people are starting to figure something out. But sadly, today is not that day. And we start in the school cafeteria for today's Where Are We At stories. I don't know about you, but as a kid, I ate a lot of Lunchables. a lot of Lunchables. Was it the only thing I ate? No, absolutely not. There were Hot Pockets and Totino's pizza rolls and plenty of other junk packaged to us as easy to eat and not too bad for us, even though it probably was pretty bad for us. It was the 80s and early to mid 90s after all. Well, it looks like, according to one prominent advocacy organization, that Lunchables and their nutritional value is even less than we may have believed up to this point. Consumer Reports is petitioning the USDA on grounds that sodium counts in the fun-to-eat meal kits are simply too high for kids, among other safety concerns. What other safety concerns, you might ask? Well, not just the high sodium counts, too much salt, but there are apparently harmful chemicals that can lead to serious health problems over time for a lot of these kids. Now, why would Consumer Reports be taking up this battle? Well, it's not just a matter of parents sending their kids to school with Lunchables. Apparently, Kraft, which is responsible for Lunchables, Kraft Heinz, excuse me, has created specially formulated versions of Lunchables that are actually being served to kids in cafeterias across the country. From Consumer Reports Director of Food Policy, Brian Ronholm, Lunchables are not a healthy option for kids and shouldn't be allowed on the menu as part of the National School Lunch Program. The Lunchables and similar lunch kits we tested contain concerning levels of sodium and harmful chemicals that can lead to serious health problems over time. Now, Kraft Heinz started supplying these Lunchable-like kits to the USDA's National School Lunch Program last year after working to create special versions that met federal nutrition guidelines. By the way, federal guidelines are hot garbage too, for being completely honest about things. I realize that you've got to meet a certain standard, but that standard sucks and it fails our kids. And by the way, there are plenty of opinions within the USDA and the panel that likely helped to come up with this decision, whose judgment may be clouded by other interests, let's just say. That exists across the spectrum, right, by the way. It's not just exclusive to the USDA. So after the USDA and Kraft Heinz created this special version of Lunchable to be sold at schools, kids were left at risk. Tests conducted showed higher amounts of sodium in the school-specific Lunchables than the actual grocery store versions. Now, Kraft has responded, saying a specialized recipe that incorporates more protein and whole grains to keep kids powered throughout the day was used, while also reducing saturated fat and sodium and increasing serving size. So the overall sodium count per serving is down, but the serving size is up, which means that technically there could be more sodium in this version of the meal than the actual Lunchable that you buy from the grocery store. And the New York Post did the math here. The increased serving size meant that a Lunchables pizza kit with 510 milligrams of sodium in the supermarket now had 700 milligrams in the school lunch version. So less per serving, but more overall. And yes, kids are going to eat the entire thing. A turkey and cheddar kit had 930 milligrams of sodium. That's surprising that it has more than the pizza, which is an increase of the 740 milligrams in the store-bought version. 930 milligrams is about two-thirds of what kids ages 4 through 8 should consume in sodium daily, according to the Mayo Clinic, and that may even be a little bit too high. Too much sodium leads to blood pressure increases and hypertension, of course. And so now there are some valid questions being asked of Kraft and the USDA with regards to what they actually consider to be healthy. Because this doesn't seem all that healthy. Is it fun to eat? Sure. It's maybe fostering a sort of interest in cooking, or at least making sandwiches or making these rudimentary pizzas that Lunchables or the Lunchables offshoot is serving at schools? Absolutely. Not good for you, though. Let's stop acting like it is. Is it something? Yes. Is something better than nothing? Sure. Absolutely. I mean, what's next here? We're going to find out that the Salisbury Steaks have some sort of chemical that is used in the creation of yoga mats? The snowballs that kids have the option to buy when they get to the end of the lunch line? Because, yes, there are a lot of dessert choices now. Plenty more than when I was in elementary school back in the late 80s and early 90s. You're going to tell me those snowballs are filled with asbestos? What's going on here? Why are we having to talk about chemicals in kids' meals? Should be much more cut and dry than that. Should be much simpler, but sadly, it is not. All right, moving on now from Lunchables to Apple. No, not the potential lunch item, the fruit Apple, the tech company Apple. I'm an Apple user, got an Apple computer. MacBook Pro, got an Apple iPhone. We all have to stop short somewhere, though. For me, can't do the wearable. Cannot wear my technology on my wrist. That distraction is already too great with that phone in my pocket. Makes it even worse when it's on your wrist and easier to touch and access and just be amazed by the flashing lights so close to your face. Well, some people have gone a step beyond that now with Apple Vision Pro having hit the market a few months back. There are some drawbacks to wearing Apple Vision Pro. Not only do you look like a colossal loser if you are wearing this in public still trying to function, you can still function. And yeah, you don't have a computer on your lap anymore. You're basically just typing into the air, or you're getting out of your car and you're, I don't know, finding Pokemons. I'm not even totally sure what people are doing who are wearing these things in public in the view of many others. You look like a colossal loser. That's one drawback. Well, apparently there are other drawbacks to wearing the Apple Vision Pro now. Users have reported these goggles, which cost over 3,000 bucks, that the goggles are giving them black eyes, headaches, and even neck pain. Emily Ullman is head of marketing at a California-based real estate photography firm. She told MarketWatch that she had suffered two super dark black eyes after wearing the Vision Pro for the first time. Well, maybe you should loosen the Vision Pro a little bit, Emily. Not that I'm defending the Apple Vision Pro. That sounds like a you problem and not an Apple Vision Pro problem. Quote, I wasn't able to use it very much the first few weeks because the fit was just off. Ullman complains that the 22-ounce headset placed too much weight on her cheeks. Another guy, Ian Beecraft, the CEO of a consulting firm called Signal, said that wearing the device caused a pain at the base of his skull and upper back after a two-hour session. I don't know, maybe you shouldn't be looking up or down too much. Maybe you should figure out a way to look ahead when you're using the Apple Vision Pro. Unless you're saying that the 22 ounces is too much for your weak neck. In that case, you may want to do some neck strengthening exercises. Why am I defending Apple Vision Pro here? I don't know, because I hate these things. As I said, if you are wearing them in public, you look like a giant loser. Yeah, wear them in the house. Pull them out at parties. Please do not wear these things in public. Walking around downtown. Certainly not while driving, although we have seen examples of people doing that too. I guess if you want to sit on the subway and do that, well, you're going to be mocked roundly, and you had better be careful because your head is no longer on a swivel there. But this sounds like a lot of user error that's happening right now. Another Redditor admitted that since they started using the Apple Vision Pro, they have constant headaches. They bought the headset on release day, which was February 2nd. They tried both the solo and dual bands, but none of them seemed to work. This is starting to strike me as a little bit of a survival of the fittest. I know that those of us who incorporate these technologies are going to be best off in the long term, but this beta version of Apple Vision Pro, I think it's weeding out the weakest among us and the most socially aloof among us as well. What do I know, though? I'm a guy with a MacBook Pro and an iPhone, so it's probably not going to be too much longer before I eventually succumb to the pressure as well. All right, that is it for another edition of Sports Day Plus. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll be back tomorrow at 6. In the meantime, have yourselves a great rest of the evening and sweet dreams.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Ellie.